Dan is loud wrong day.
I was loud wrong this weekend.
Loud.
What is today's date? Let's mark it as an official holiday.
Wrong.
I will not be able to say anyone else is wrong about anything.
So loud.
Even if like OJ Simpson did that today, I would never be able to say anyone was wrong.
So wrong.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. What's better? Great sex or Dan being loud wrong?
Do you have the self-discipline to do this?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I will go the entire show today. In fact, you pointed out, I'll take fines every time I mention that anyone's wrong about anything.
I could say whatever I want. You can't point out that I'm wrong.
Right. Just anyone? Not even us. Like, anyone in the nation.
Like, what if Stugatz is factually wrong about something?
Doesn't matter. You can't point it out.
Yeah, someone else will have to jump on that.
I am the most wrong. All right, if you're wondering what it is that I was loud wrong about, we will play some of that sound for you in a second, because it could be anything, really.
It really can.
It could be Josh Allen, or it could be Jimmy Butler, but we will start with Jimmy Butler, because I've got yet more stats for you that prove how dominant he was last night. This is a time-honored tradition, okay, throughout sports. You've got a guy on the radio or on television or in the newspaper who is loud and strident and obnoxious, and he is a know-it-all. And isn't it funny when the know-it-all knows nothing at all? Like, for example, I wish that this hadn't happened the way that it happened, because I said this before the game, game two. And no one could tell me I was loud wrong after game two. Mm-hmm. But here's why you can tell me that I'm wrong after game three of the finals. Right. LeBron James, an all-time player, and Anthony Davis, pretty much a consensus top five player in the league.
Yep.
And you're going after that with Jimmy Butler. That's pretty clearly not enough if Bam's not going to play at all.
All I'm saying is he is the superstar. Granted, he's not LeBron James. He has a career high of 53 points. For one night, you need Jimmy Butler to play like a superstar.
But he's not that kind of superstar.
Like, I know, but can he be for a night, I guess, is what I'm asking.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? What can he be for a night? Like, are you talking about take 30 shots and score 40 points?
Jimmy Butler is not buying into the fact that this series is done. That's just not how he's cut. We all know that. He sounds ridiculous now in interviews to The Nation. I wouldn't put him past him, because he's like literally the only option if Bam and Goran Dragic can't go.
I think
him
I'd
and Tyler.
Have to put it past him, though, Mike, because that's not the kind of player that he is, especially on a team where he's going to be the primary option, where the Lakers, who have an exceptional defense, not decent, it's an exceptional defense, and they've got a legitimate rim protector. Explain to me how you guys have Jimmy Butler getting into that stratosphere when the shots are difficult to come by and they're going to be leaning toward him. Okay, there's more than that. That wasn't the worst of it. Chris winces on certain sentences that we have played during the local hour and on the Big Stewie digital only hour.
And I didn't mean 40 points on 30 shots. I meant 40 points on 20 shots.
That's right. 40 yes. points, an efficient 40 points, 14 of 20. He is the first guy to score 40 without a three-pointer since Shaq. Since Shaq in 2002, that's more points in the paint than he's ever had.
0-2?
Ever. That's right, 0-2. Jimmy Butler's never had that game. He had more points than LeBron, more rebounds than LeBron, more assists than LeBron. That's never happened to LeBron before from an opponent or a teammate. You could combine Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and all you would arrive at is the same numbers that Jimmy Butler put up in that game. Wait, I got more for you, though. It's not just that. This is from Simon Smith. Jimmy Butler defended LeBron James for 32 possessions in game three. LeBron had 9.7 turnovers. 9.7 turnovers.
I mean, he dominated the best player ever.
I mean, yes. I did not think that there would be a circumstance in that series where you'd look on the court and say Jimmy Butler for that night was the best player on the court. I did not think that that was something that was in any way possible.
Best player in the world.
I mean, look, I've said LeBron is the best player in the history of the sport, but here's me being yet more wrong.
Dan, do you think Jimmy Butler can give you one of those games?
No. Well,
you don't.
No.
Like what? Like, because they need that tonight.
Well, he gave you one of those games against Milwaukee. He is capable of one of those.
With Bam Adebayo sort of being the trigger on everything they were doing offensively. No, I don't think you can get a 40-point Jimmy Butler game out of nowhere when he's going to be their only offensive weapon. Like, he's going to be their only offensive creator. It's not just that you're losing an all-star in Goran Dragic. You're getting the two guys through which the offense runs when they're out there. So now, what is going to happen? It's going to be LeBron guarding Jimmy Butler? Yeah, I'd forgotten about Olynyk, too, by the way. Why would I dare say? The only way that would have been better is if I had made the joke, well, where's Jimmy Butler going to go for help? Olynyk? More. The reason that I question what you guys are doing with Jimmy Butler is because it's not even like you can bank on a consistent jumper. Like, maybe Jimmy Butler can play a super aggressive game and get you 12 free throws or something. Maybe Jimmy Butler decides to go neck first into the paint and try to create stuff for their three-point shooters. But I just don't know how you get the monster scoring game from a guy whose jumper you don't trust. How do you do that? So you do it the way that Jimmy Butler did, saving their season, playing the best game he's ever played, triple-double with 40 points. If you had said to me, Stugatz, you don't think he could put up a triple-double with 40 points? I mean, yes. You might have even gotten more out of me in terms of, like, what are you talking about?
You're saying the best game that he's ever played. There haven't been many games played where someone's played better.
That's true.
Period.
That's true. The efficiency. Again, I didn't think that Jimmy could get to 40 against that defense inefficiently, to be clear. But lest you think that that was the most wrong I was yesterday, here are some Josh Allen stats for you. So here's Field Yates saying Josh Allen threw one quarter of the NFL season, 105 of 148 for a 71% completion percentage, 1,326 passing yards, 12 passing TDs, one interception, three rushing TDs, a current pace of over 5,000 passing yards, and 50 total touchdowns. This from ESPN Stats Info. Josh Allen is one of four quarterbacks to ever throw for 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns in a 3-0 start, along with Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, and Jim Kelly. Those previous three quarterbacks all reached the Super Bowl that season. And here from The Athletic. Allen has already completed four passes for 30 yards or more, as many as he did all of last season. He leads the NFL with 21 completions and 585 yards on passes that travel 15 yards or more in the air. During a season when offenses are scoring at a record pace, Allen is second to Dak Prescott with 21 completions of 20 or more yards. So which one am I more wrong on? You
banner,
have to choose.
Banner week for you.
You have to choose. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Where was Dan more wrong? Jimmy Butler or Josh Allen?
I have to be honest. Jimmy Butler made me forget about Josh Allen. So, I mean,
a 40-point triple-double is pretty good, except Josh Allen is putting up the equivalent of those in every single football game he's playing. And whatever the equivalent is for a triple-double. All right, so South Florida has some sports winners at the moment. The Miami Heat end up winning. Billy's Marlins are in the playoffs. They doused the Cubs. They held the Cubs to one run to extinguish their season. It will not be that easy against the Braves. They've got much better hitters. But please tell me about your enthusiasm. Also, the University of Miami.
You're just going to poop on it. No, Dan. No, I will not, because this is how it's going to go. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm excited about the Marlins. You know, things are going well for them. I don't know how they're going to go against the Braves. You're like, Pat Riley brought in Jimmy Butler when no one else could, and the Heat three times, and the Armani's, blah, 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 and the Marlins, and what they're doing, 60-game season, and Armani suits anywhere he goes, he can get Armani, and the Heat and Derek Jeter, and what they did, and Bruce Sherman and Rob Manfred, and blah, 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 and it's like, okay, well, here we go again.
But I'm not allowed to do that today. You can say whatever you want, and I can't say that that you're wrong about anything. I would think that you would take that opportunity. But instead, Mike, tell me about number one against number seven, the University of Miami against Clemson.
Third consecutive college game day appearance for the Miami Hurricanes. But this time, when they take on Clemson boys, they've got a punter, they've got a kicker, and they've got a quarterback. That's right. We've got a Heisman elimination game going down at Death Valley on Saturday night. Prime time with Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit Sugats.
This time they deserve college game day.
Oh, number one. Number seven. Let's see exactly what the gulf is and, you know, gather ourselves and, you know, take our second crack in the ACC championship game.
Who's who?
Are we going to find out who's who this weekend? Yeah, you're yes, declaring. Wait a minute. Has Chris Cody come in from a week off running through the streets, freckled and nude and pale and pink with wearing nothing but Crocs, mm-hmm. celebrating his greatness in Miami sports. He has declared it a who's who game.
I think we know who Clemson is, Chris. They're the team that's won, I think, two national championships in the last 3 years. We need to find out who the Canes are. Because we have no idea, you know?
It's the rare who's who, but not a must win, Dan. Those are very different things.
Yep.
They are?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very Explain different. It to me, please. I can't correct you on anything.
Well, we're going to find out who's who, but it's not a must win. They don't need to win the game. This is one that you can let go as long as it's manageable because it's early enough in the season.
It's kind of where we figure out if this who can match up with that who.
Mm-hmm.
Well said, guys. Because if you get the one loss, not only do you get it early, but you get it to Clemson.
Right.
And the rare opportunity to erase the loss. That's right, Dan. You mm-hmm. can have one loss on the season, but net zero losses if you defeat Clemson in the ACC title game.
But it has mm-hmm. to be manageable, as Billy pointed out. This is a game where you'll find out if who can turn into who. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Yes, exactly.
The result of this game, Dan, won't be written in ink. It will be written in pencil.
I thought for sure you'd go Dan Lebitard in the middle there instead of when you want to go maximum condescending, you generally use my first and last name.
I feel like we're on a first name basis. No need for formalities.
Are there any must wins? I know you guys love doing this with the must wins, but isn't a must win only the one that ends your season? And you're saying that this is not a must win for Miami because it doesn't immediately end their national championship season. But if you're willing to say that, then only when in a best of seven series, you're down to your last loss. That's the only must win there ever is.
Last night was a must win for the Heat.
Absolutely.
They had to win that game.
Because no one's ever come back from being down 3-0 in the NBA finals. Mm-hmm. Must win.
Like game four is a must win for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It is?
Yeah, and the Heat. The rare must win. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I know I can't correct you guys, but you're saying that this is...
Well, the series hasn't started yet.
So, that's right, because both teams have only won on their home floor. That's right. I think that the South Beach flu got Anthony Davis last night. That's what ended up happening. He went out clubbing.
Game four, also the rare blueprint game for the Lakers, Dan.
Yeah. It is?
Oh, yeah. Blueprints on the line.
How can it be if they could still win the series after that in six games?
It's an early blueprint game.
Exactly.
Tomorrow? Wait a minute. Okay, I can't correct you.
You guys are making nothing but good points.
I can't correct you, but explain to me how tomorrow is a must-win game if the Lakers can then win in six after that.
It's exactly the way that the game that the Heat were playing the Celtics, I think like the first or second game of the Big Three era was a blueprint game for the Big Three. Similar situation.
Exactly.
Game four of the NBA.
Nailed
exactly.
It.
Lakers
nailed
blueprint.
It.
And to give your argument even more credence, the Miami Heat in NBA Finals history have only been down 0-2 twice now. First time was against the Dallas Mavericks in 2006, and I think we all know how that turned out.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, you don't want this to go the way of 2006 Los Angeles.
Dan, this is a game, if you lose, you don't completely throw away the blueprint. You roll it up, you throw it into the garbage, but you don't rip it up. You don't shred it because you can take it back out if you win game five and six.
This isn't a complete teardown. This is, do we want to add a walk-in shower to the master bath?
So Anthony Davis was really terrible last night in a way that couldn't be unseen. Mike has already taken away the finals MVP from him.
Lost it. It's gone. No shot at it.
Weird.
And he, if you were somebody, by the way, who believes in these kinds of things, and I don't know because I haven't actually heard it, but a whistleblower podcast on Tim Donaghy suggests that there was somebody lying for him for a long time in terms of some of the stuff that happened there. But for those of you who are cynically minded about this stuff, because the series has not been something that's been interesting to people, we've talked about how somehow Nets Spurs, which was a truly terrible final, outrated game one of Lakers Heat. If you are the league, you want Anthony Davis in foul trouble in a game.
Well, if you're ESPN, yes. It's been said previous years, like when the Raptors and Warriors, I learned that if a series goes five games, you break even. A sweep is disastrous for financials, right? If it goes five, you break even. And where the real money is for the network is if it goes six. And if it goes seven, buku dollars. So Jimmy Butler's out here saving jobs, pal.
You think this thing will go seven, Dan? Or
I just want to press on the button.
Say
here.
No.
Again, I know what you're – thanks, to God. So your subtlety is always a strength. I know what you're trying to do. It's a little too recent. I remember things that I've said before, and I know what's up here. I am loud wrong today, so I'm not going to say things
like
that
today. Yeah,
per the
rules, you can't call anybody else wrong either. Yeah,
I have tomorrow to do it. I'm not saying – I mean, I can't even call him morally wrong.
No, in fact, like the whole walk-in shower thing, you just credit Billy with being – right for an excellent point.
Okay, excellent point, Billy. So it's a blueprint game where we're throwing away the blueprint in the trash, but we're not ripping it up, and we're thinking about a walk-in closet.
Modifications, Dan. The foundation isn't there completely done yet.
Thank you, Billy. I appreciate it. Excellent wisdom. We'll get back to Christine Lisi in a second, but lest you think that Stugatz will let me suffer alone in silence, just know that during every break he is actively, this is the time that Stugatz decides to read and do research. Go ahead, read all the stats, Stugatz, that you're reading at me during the break. We're in a confined space. I've been eating it for 2.5 hours.
Right.
And during the break, Stugatz is just reading nonstop. He's all of a sudden a thinker and a philosopher. He's just reading nonstop. He's an analytics guy.
Right.
Go ahead and read the people what it is you're reading me during the break.
This is courtesy of Hembo at Paul Hembo on Twitter. Jimmy Butler became the third player in NBA Finals history to score 40 points on 20 or fewer shots. The other two, Shaquille O'Neal and George Mikan.
Yes. Good post players, both of them. Again, that is the type of person that I expect to be doing damage around the rim. That's what those people look like, George Mikan and Shaquille O'Neal, not Jimmy Butler with the greatest game in the paint that he has ever had. We will have Stugatz's weekend observations for you at 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central. Christine, please continue with what it is that you were saying.
And finally, in 2008, the social network Bebo was purchased by AOL for $850 million. 5 years later, the original owners repurchased it for $1 billion. Speaking of terrible investments made by a big company, here's Dan.
Yes. Christine, what do you like during Bills games right now, now that it feels like you have a quarterback? Are you normal, rational, or are you screaming at your television?
I yell a lot. I'm not a lot of fun to watch Bills games with. I never have been. My husband and dog usually go out and sit on the deck for a while to leave me by myself.
Wow. Okay. Nice. Very good. So I can't imagine Christine Lisi screaming at her television. But
and using bad words.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right.
Are you laughing at Dan as he continues to be wrong about Josh Allen?
It crosses my mind once in a while.
Congratulations, Christine. It is an exciting thing when it feels like your team has a young quarterback, but the schedule gets tougher from here. I wanted to bring up a point that Mike Ryan brought up during the Big Suey, which I think is worth noting, as we were talking about the fact that amazingly the White House was penetrated by the coronavirus, but the basketball playoff bubble hasn't been. Okay, so what we expected from the basketball experience, or at least what I did, is, oh, there are going to be guys, meaningful guys, the playoff results are going to be distorted because meaningful players are going to have to leave during the playoffs. That didn't actually happen. It didn't actually happen in hockey. It has not yet happened in baseball, but it has now happened in football, where the on-field product is being debilitated by the fact that the Patriots quarterback, Cam Newton, is relinquishing his position to a guy who has lost 10 straight NFL starts, Brian Hoyer. And the thing that Mike Ryan brought up, and this is a quarter way through the season when it arrives, and I think it is worth noting, you're better off having an outbreak. You're better off not containing the virus. You're better off being the Titans and simply having your game canceled than being the Patriots and heading into a game against the Chiefs with Brian Hoyer, who's lost 10 straight starts. That's a crazy thing to say, and it is a crazier thing to experience when all of these games are meaningful, because when you have 16 of them, it's different than basketball and baseball. Even when baseball has 60, it's different. And so you get into a position where football is actually being distorted. The on-field product, the standings, the things that you care about, the collection of information on measurements on what a team is, it has not happened this way. This is the first time in sports where a star is getting taken out, a star team is being hurt, and football is being distorted in a way that favors Christine Lisi's build.
And just to update everyone, the Tennessee Titans, who did have it team-wide, basically, they have not had a positive test today. So that, according to Diana Rossini and Adam Schefter.
But the Patriots are flying.
No,
they're flying on two different planes, people who have been in contact. They're flying today.
But to your point, the Titans will play that game at full strength in all likelihood in week 5 of the NFL.
I actually don't know if they're going to be full strength. I don't know what the procedures are. Maybe there's a 14-day quarantine. I'll see clarification on that. But regardless, this is very short notice to get together a game plan for Bill Belichick and New England. Even if all those players for Tennessee that had positive tests won't be available this week, though at least with all these negative results, get into their facility and have a full work week to formulate a game plan, given how shorthanded they are. New England's just like, okay, Brian Hoyer, go out there, travel on the road, and depending on which plane that you're in, and devise a game plan to be Patrick Mahomes.
But they have no choice. But I think where Dan is headed here is, what if this happens late in the season? What if it happens in the postseason where you're losing Cam Newton and you have to play a playoff game with Brian Hoyer?
Well, but this is the thing about how short the football season is. We have not had something like this anywhere in American sports since it continued, where it's a disproportionate penalty you are suffering for someone merely getting sick, and you're better off with half your team getting sick than you are with this one guy and you handling the protocol, because the reward for you handling the protocol as well is you got to get on two flights now to play Patrick Mahomes, one with a plane full of people who have had contact with Cam Newton because of whatever the gestation period is on this stuff, and another with a plane of guys who haven't.
Well, remember when this started happening to Major League Baseball? We were looking around. All right, what's the plan? The plan is nobody play. We'll figure it out, and we'll make up the games later in the season. We looked around.
Football can't do that.
But what happens if they have it later in the season? Hopefully they don't. That's a plan. With the NFL, okay, you have a bye week built in to your schedule. So that was the easy answer when it came to Tennessee. Where's the next available week? The Super Bowl, is this something that you can move? Because you can maybe shift the schedule yet another week, potentially, because there's always a bye before the Super Bowl. But they don't really have a lot of options if the Tennessee Titans get it again.
Super Bowl's an awful big thing to move.
And DeSantis is already saying that he expects a full stadium for the Super Bowl. So I don't really know if they have that flexibility.
If Belichick goes into Arrowhead with Brian Hoyer and wins the game, Most impressive victory on his resume?
Stugatz, I think the most impressive one on his resume is going in there with Brady and winning in a playoff game. What are you kidding me? What is the point spread in this game? When was the last time the Patriots were a dog this way in a football game? Because I've got to imagine that whatever the point spread is it up to two touchdowns? Because
I think it's 12. I think the Patriots are plus 12. I'm checking on it, but it's the
ask our friends at Caesars William Hill.
It's the biggest underdog they've been since 2002, I believe. So,
yeah, Roy put this in the chat. The Patriots are 10.5-point underdog tonight. They haven't been as big an underdog since the Super Bowl against the Rams in 2002 when they were a 14-point dog and they ended up winning by 3.
Actually, you know what? Man, I remember that being a bigger point spread than that. Is that Super Bowl, I remember them being a 17.5-point dog in that Rams Super Bowl. You're telling me it was 14? Because that number just kept climbing. I got to imagine that this one's going to keep climbing. Does 10.5 sound? I mean, the Chiefs are going to be favored in every game they play for the rest of the season if Mahomes is healthy. Doesn't that seem like a small line to you, given that they're going in there? That's giving Belichick a lot of credit. They're going in there with a starting quarterback who's lost his last 10 starts.
Yeah, but this one's with Belichick.
You guys give Belichick a lot of credit, man, to merely make them a 10.5-point dog.
News from the Dan Le Batard Nation. Someone has just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. Bill Hughes at Hughes AZ responded to the Twitter poll question of where was Dan more wrong, Jimmy Butler or Josh Allen, by saying none of the above. The correct answer is the 2008 Lions would make the playoffs. They ended up 0-16.
What about Tom Brady?
Oh, I tried to warn you.
There are plenty of places to choose from on Dan Was Loud Wrong Day. Stugatz's weekend observations are coming up in about 12 minutes. This is from Nick Wright. He wrote in real time, pick six for Tom Brady. That's his fourth in his last seven games dating back to last year. And then Albert Breer wrote that after the pick six, Tom Brady's last 15 pass attempts, 14 of 15, 223 yards, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Jeff Darlington says Tom Brady, at 43 years old, just put together a second-half performance that included 15 of 17 completions for 263 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's a perfect passer rating of 158.3. Still got it. And then Mike Clay, NFL, writes, Tom Brady, who was reported as washed as recently as an hour or so ago, completed 30 of 46 passes for 369 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. The Bucs are 3-1.
Without his second best wide receiver, Chris Godwin. Like he was throwing to tight ends. It was Brate, it was OJ Howard, it was Gronk, it was Scotty Miller. That's who Brady was throwing to yesterday.
OJ Howard picked up an Achilles injury. Yeah. Evans had to go to the locker room to receive treatment. The surprising thing is that he was throwing the ball downfield after that pick six, because that's where you see the game start to deteriorate some with age. But the pick sixes are a concern. That's stuff that he just wouldn't do for his career. He thinks he can get to the ball in a window that he can't quite do.
It used to be like an alien landing on the field. It's like seeing Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers do something dumb in the red zone. Like when you see it happen, right, you're like, wait a minute, that's distorted. It's gotten to the point with some of the efficiencies of these quarterbacks, Stugatz, that I'm surprised when there's any kind of inaccurate throw. Like anything that a guy's a step open and the ball gets thrown over his head, I'm surprised that it's gotten like Carson Wentz yesterday. Carson Wentz, who has nothing at the skill positions, who's throwing everything 4 yards. Carson Wentz made a perfect throw late in that game to save Philadelphia. They go down from down 14-11 to winning the game from there. As, by the way, good Lord, the interception thrown by, who is it, Mullins? What the hell is that quarterback's
Nick
name?
Mullins, yeah.
The interception thrown by him for a pick six yesterday. What the hell was that? Did you guys see?
Got him benched.
I mean, what was he called?
He was being called a potential franchise quarterback last week, Nick
Mullins. CJ Beathard came in.
So guys, I want you to look up, because you were probably sleeping at that point because it was late. I want you to look up the interception that Mullins threw to end that game essentially for San Francisco, because it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain a professional quarterback dropping back and being so locked in on the guy taking the 10-yard out that he throws it straight at a linebacker's face mask.
It's funny that tonight is the game that's postponed due to pandemic, right? They rescheduled that game when I don't think I've ever seen two teams more engulfed by injury than the Eagles, which I have no idea why they are always so hurt. Why are the Eagles always so hurt? And the Niners are super banged up, too. That was a mash unit game.
What did Nick Mullins see?
It's amazing.
Seriously, there's not a red jersey.
I know. It's very strange. I don't have any idea what he saw. One of the things, right, we've talked a little bit about just the bare naked greed of the business aspect of sports that you see that the SEC and the ACC churn ahead, and you saw what baseball did, which is just a grotesque distortion of everything that's happening in that sport with the short games. But when you look, Mike, at the number of injuries going on in football because they had no preseason, because of the idea that whether you're wrestlers or football players, your body needs to develop sort of the callus. We have to have a calloused viewpoint on the callous bodies that have to go out there so that they're not enduring this uncommon injury pain. And the number of injuries in that sport through a quarter of a season, like, rarely is the greed of sports laid this bare where you just see, oh, wow, okay, we're just going to stick a bunch of bodies in the wood chipper here. They're not really – this game is obviously inhumane. It's obviously violence for a paycheck. You're going to ravage your body in ways that you might feel in retirement. And also, as an added bonus, it's going to be even worse than normal. And it's not just the Patriots flying in two planes, flying on the day of a game, landing and then having to play a football game. It's also that there's just going to be carnage everywhere beyond even what you're used to. Stugatz's weekend observations are next.